This is the Better Reading Podcast platform with stories behind the story, Jane's Be Better podcast, My Book Chat with Caroline Overington, and more. Looking for a particular podcast? Remember, you can always skip to it.
Welcome to the Better Reading Podcast, Stories Behind the Story, brought to you by Belinda Audio. Listen to Belinda audiobooks anywhere, everywhere.
Hi, this is Cheryl Arkell for the Better Reading Podcast, Stories Behind the Story. We talk to authors about how they came to tell us their story. Greg Woodland, welcome to Better Reading.
Thank you so much, Cheryl. Delighted to be here.
Greg, I'm super excited to have you because you are our first book under our Copyright Agency Cultural Fund grant, where we receive funding to promote new Australian authors like yourself.
That's fantastic.
Isn't that fantastic?
Yeah.
The Copyright Agency is a great supporter of Australian writers, of course. And so, yeah, we got this bit of money and we've decided to do 7 Australian authors this year and you're our first. So here we go,
okay.
Right?
First cab on the rank, okay.
Absolutely, no pressure at all. I'm sure you can pull it off. So let me introduce you. So obviously you're an author, but your career has mainly been a screenwriter, a director.
That's right.
Since 2000, you've worked as a freelance script editor and a consultant for film funding bodies and the Australian Writers Guild. So this is your first novel, and it's called The Night Whistler, which I've got to say is a terrific-looking package. I mean, I love the cover. Love the cover. So talk to me about your career. I guess you've been a storyteller all your life. I mean, so screenwriting and writing books are different crafts, but they are essentially the same thing. They're storytelling, right?
I have. I've been writing stories since I was a teenager, really, but not in a professional way. And I was an absolutely prolific journal keeper as a young guy. I've got probably 10,000 or 15,000 pages of journals that I religiously kept. I mean, they make for very depressing reading if I want to dip into them. But
how old were you when you started writing a journal? Because that's unusual for boys.
Yeah, I was about 20, 21, I think. And so through my early 20s, I was mid-20s, I was fairly religiously keeping these journals, these particular black journals with the red edges that you could get. It was one particular book that I liked to fill with notes. And a lot of them were about the stuff that I was reading. I was doing a heck of a lot of in-depth reading and working my way through at the time Henry Miller and Dostoevsky.
Whoa, and the heavy Russians. Reading.
Yeah, well, Dostoevsky, very entertaining, I've got to say. And those sort of books would really keep me up at night, and I would write a lot about them. And of course, I really got into Dostoevsky and his life, and I was almost jealous that I wasn't epileptic at the time because he was so wonderful. He'd had this incredible life, and I was quite fascinated with him. And in a way, that's kind of what led me deeper into crime fiction, because he pretty much wrote the first or arguably one of the first or second detective stories ever, which was Crime and Punishment. And I'd been a huge reader as a teenager of Agatha Christie and the Alfred Hitchcock Stories for Late at Night series. I'd worked my way through Christie as a kid, but as I got a little older and was at uni, I just immersed myself in Dostoevsky and the Russians. They are incredibly entertaining. They sound very heavy, but I just thought he had such a great grip on suspense and leaving you on a cliffhanger at the end of every chapter.
So then your career, tell me what you did. You went to university?
Oh, yeah, I dropped out of university, of Uni of New England, which was very smart of me, halfway through my third year.
Yeah.
And
you were nearly finished.
I know, halfway through third year. And I became a dishwasher for a while, decided to go to Asia, do a trip to Asia for 6 months. And so I became a dishwasher, a brick scraper, and joined a punk band as well, punk rock band. It was Armadale's first, I think, in about 77 or early 78. And I did make it to Asia, and that gave me a lot of fodder for writing the early stories and things I was writing, and a lot of the notes that I wrote that were going to be notes for other novels, which never did actually happen, because somehow around about 84, 83, I got diverted into filmmaking. I joined a group at UNSW called Opunka, and we would make short films. I was the only one that turned up with a bunch of small scripts, and so I was pushed into directing. And hey, I became a writer-director for a few years.
Tell me about that career.
I think at the time in Australia, the auteur theory was very popular. Every Australian young filmmaker, male and female, wanted to be a writer-director, but we didn't all have the talent of a Woody Allen or Ingmar Bergman. And so a lot of us might have been better as storytellers than as directors, or vice versa. And I found myself a little bit like that. I made quite a lot of short films and they did quite well. But when it came to getting a feature film up, a longer form story, I found that that was more difficult. Writing, I struggled with the longer form story. And I did finally come to a point where I had a number of scripts that were pretty good and got support and came very close to tipping over the critical mass that enables a film to get made. And but one after the other, they didn't quite make it. They always stalled for some reason around about the night of June 30th, which is when you had to get the money or you'd turn into a pumpkin. And so my films never quite got up, but I managed to, I had a career as a director, directing TV commercials and corporate videos, government videos, Air Force training films, all that sort of thing for about 14, 15 years. And then I wound up getting more into the script side of things when my wife and I decided to move to Bundeena and have a child. I had to get something that was more regular than the directing work. I got a script development business together called Script Central, and that has been my mainstay pretty much for the last 17 years. That's enabled me to assess, read, co-write or script edit hundreds and hundreds of Australian scripts.
That puts you in a great position, I think, to be able to edit. I think makes you, other people's work makes you a better writer, don't you think?
I think it does in a way, although they're different sides of the brain. The editing is your left brain, of course, and sometimes that can be a bit too dominant. You've got to get rid of it, kick it out of the way, I think. I found I had quite a lot of trouble with that, and I was able to get into that more creative thinking once I started writing novels back about 8 years ago.
So talk to me about the transition, because I've spoken to authors like Melina Marchetta, for instance, that's talked to me about adapting her story to a script and how difficult that was and how many words had to be pared back. And I mean, I don't know, you're looking at a novel that's probably 80 or 90,000 words and a screenplay.
A script of 20,000, that's right. I came to it from the other way, of course. They called it the Americans call it adapting sideways. I had a couple of scripts that had done very well, got a lot of support, and had both been poised to go in 2008. And then the GFC happened, the global financial crisis happened, and the distributor pulled out of it, out of one of them that was all set to go. So having resigned them to the bottom shelf, I took them out some years later. Two of them called me back and I started working on them as a novelist. I found it incredibly liberating, even though it was difficult. You had a lot more world building to do, a lot more detail to put in, but you also had the room to develop sentences and develop characters. And that's what I really loved, to unpack these characters in a way that you couldn't as much. You had to deal with them in a fairly shorthand way in a script, which of course is ruled by the three-act structure.
I want to talk about thinking about stories. So, for instance, when I think about story, it's usually always in, not that I'm a writer, but I do think about things in terms of a book, you know, it's kind of beginning, middle, ending. So just trying to get my head around this question for you is, when you think of story, do you think film? Are you thinking visual, or are you thinking of a book? I mean, I'm wondering if there's a difference for you as a writer.
I do think visually. I think that's the training of years watching movies and thinking in terms of writing them. So, yes, I do think quite visually, and I think that's come out on the page of The Night Whistler. But I also think in terms of character. Quite a lot of filmmakers begin with plot and work it through, outline their stories and work it through in terms of plot. I tend to start with character. I really love complex characters and flawed characters. And so for me, that's really was the joy of beginning writing books. I could not exactly forget about structure, because you've of course got that in mind. And I outline The Night Whistler extensively, and I had to stop outlining it when I did my third draft or so.
Can you explain that to me?
Well, it's been said that there are two types of writers fundamentally. There are plotters and pantsers. Those that write books.
I know that. Yeah.
So I'm one of the plotters.
Right.
And that's a discipline that I learned writing from film school and film teachers writing screenplays.
Got it.
Yeah, you would plot it. When I first began writing scripts, I just pantsed it, and I wouldn't finish them, you know. You wouldn't know where you're going. I had a vague idea, and then somewhere around about 50 pages into a script, they would peter out. So I learned the craft of outlining, using index cards to outline and to work out the structure. You would write a scene on every card until you had a stack of about 100 cards. And then you would organise them into Act 1, Act 2, Act 3. And there are all kinds of colour coding you can use too for characters. You can get quite fancy with them, and some writers do. I believe Dervla McTiernan, I heard on your show, talk about colour coded cards.
She's definitely not a pantser.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Dervla, I think, is brilliant. And she ran, I don't know if you saw it, she ran, I think it was a four-part series on writing on our Facebook page. Anyway, it's
No, I didn't see it. I must go and have a look.
Yeah, it is there for anyone. Now, I watched it because I was moderating it and watched it with my professional hat on. But I tell you, I finished that four-part course and I thought maybe one day I could write a book. I mean, she really had me intrigued. So for those of you that want to write, that's the place to go. But I want to get back to that, the discipline of that. I'm very lucky because, and I feel that this is lucky, when I read a book, even though I've worked in this industry for over 30 years, when I read a book, because I'm not an editor and I'm not a writer, I don't see anything other than the story. When I watch a film, or watch a TV show. I don't see anything other than I am totally immersed. I don't see the scenes, the takes, or whatever technical elements. I really am one of those people that always enjoys the story as it's told. Wow. And I think that's a real privilege for me, isn't it? You know?
Yeah.
But I do, I hate watching something where somebody's sitting there pulling apart. That just takes the joy out of it for me, because I buy it. You know, I might not like the story, but I buy the storytelling. Now, for you, and what comes across for me is the smoothness. If it's a good film, if it's a good book particularly, is the smoothness in the reading or the smoothness in taking in the story. So for me, that's when you've got plot and craft meet, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So talk to me about the difference, like going from a script to a book. And were you feeling that, like as you were writing long form? Because it is really so different.
It is different, and I was very lucky to win an ASA Emerging Authors mentorship, and I wound up getting...
How lucky are you? You got that, and you've got this copyright agency.
Yeah, I was lucky, all right. I wound up with this terrific and very tough and rigorous editor, Melanie Austell, and I worked with Melanie on my manuscript for about... about 9 months or so. We did a couple of drafts. The first time I got her notes, she delivered about 10,000 words of what needed to be fixed on the manuscript. Pretty daunting it was, pretty daunting. But after I recovered...
I heard Dervla talk about that too, how you accept those notes. She said that the publisher or the editor kept saying, oh, what a great book, what a great book.
Yeah.
Oh, what a great bit, but blah. And then there was, you know, more.
Yeah, that's right. There's just a few notes I've got. About 30 pages of notes.
Yeah.
So after I picked myself up off the floor and slept it off and ranted at my wife for a bit that this woman doesn't know what I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
I looked at
her. Of course, she's wrong and you're right. Of course, she's
wrong. Yeah, well, I read her notes again. I discovered she did know what she was talking about. And yes, I had to admit that that was right. And I disagreed with this and that. But anyway, I did duly go through it. And it took me about 2 months to address all her notes. And I sent it back to her. And I think she was impressed that I hadn't fallen down and given up. And so she then duly asked me, would I like. She had much fewer notes the second time, and would I like representation? Because she's also a literary agent. And,
fantastic.
And of course, yeah, that was another huge piece of luck, taking her on as my agent, and that helped get it to text, of course, after that.
Oh, look, I think definitely there's an element of luck there and perseverance, but there's got to be talent in storytelling.
Yeah, I think so. Talent and sheer bloody-minded persistence.
Taking 10,000 word changes. I mean, you know, that to me, I think I would just curl up in a heap and cry for the next 10 days. You know, I couldn't do
that. Well, one discipline from screenwriting is that we're used to rewriting. You know, screenwriting is rewriting, as they say, and you are used to going back and doing draft after draft. Now, somehow I thought it'd be different when I was writing a novel. I just thought, nah, can't be that many. Well, I was wrong, of course. I was wrong. There were quite a few. But I actually enjoy going back and rewriting. This is the thing. Once I get over the hurdles of not agreeing. And then of course, a good editor gives you the freedom of disagreeing with her every now and then. And, you know, every now and then. And that's good. I discovered there were things that I really wanted to dig my heels in about, and others that I tried their way. And between, you know, it is a collaborative thing, working with an editor.
It's such a personal relationship on so many levels, I think. I mean, you know, of course it's professional, but there's that thing where you both intimately know the work so well.
Yeah, it's quite flattering in a way to have somebody who knows the work, but they don't know the work quite as much as you because you wrote it. Of course, they know it in a different way, and they have a benchmark they're trying to apply to your work, I guess. They can see that it can be much better, and that's a great thing too. Look, I quite enjoyed the different drafts I did with Melanie and then with senior editor of Text, Mandy Brett. They were both terrific in their way, different approaches. And I just I went along with it. And it's fortunate that love rewriting.
So it's published now. It's out now, isn't it?
No, it's out in 2 weeks, August the 4th it comes out.
Yeah. It really is. It's called The Night Whistler. Now, what about this? And I've been thinking about this while talking to you. What about if film rights are sold of the book and it gets made into a movie, right, or a TV series? Wouldn't that have been the long way,
around? Well, what have goes around comes that? Around. I have thought about it. Yeah, it's such a strange journey. It hasn't happened yet, but it might happen. Who knows? You know, if the book sells well, it just might get a movie or a TV series offer. You know, I think it'd make a good TV series. It's quite become a lot more complex since it was a script. The script was only really probably a quarter of it. There's so much extra stuff has gone into the book.
Yeah. Do you read any modern day crime fiction, any Australian crime?
Oh, absolutely. You know, Christian White, Derval McTiernan, Adrian McKinty's probably my favourite. And
Peter Temple. Michael Robotham?
Yeah, I've read Michael Robotham. He's great.
Yeah. You're really in very good company. I think I said this earlier, I've been in the business a long time. I often don't like to talk about how many years. But when I started out, it really, if you were thinking crime, you really were thinking American crime or English crime authors, whether it was male or female. And really, I was a bookseller for a long time and there wasn't a lot of Australian crime. Now, I don't know why that is.
There was Arthur Upfield who wrote the Boney books. That was, in fact, the kind of the first outback noir.
Yeah.
They've been rubbished a little bit and, you know, culturally he kind of made his own rules a little bit. And yet they're really quite well written, some of them.
Yeah. But now we are on the international scale, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's right.
Jane Harper, as you said.
Yeah, the dry. Robert.
Yeah, all of them are up there. So you really are, walking into a genre that's very, very popular at the moment and very well respected, I think, in terms of Australian writing. Is that your genre, do you think?
That is. I didn't, when I started writing this about 5 years ago, I think the dry just came out after I started. I remember reading it on a plane. And thinking, oh, God, I think I'm going to give this book of mine a miss. What the heck? She's done it really well. What am I bothering for? Anyway, then I began to realise that if they liked the dry, they would want, readers would want some other stuff in that genre. And then not long after, I think Scrublands came out the year after that.
Which Chris Hammer. Really,
yeah, Chris Hammer. I loved that too.
Yeah.
And little by little, there were quite a few more. But Gary Disher, who I'm a huge fan of, has been writing in that outback noir, that small town crime drama, for quite a few years, quite a while before Jane Harper. He'd done Bitterwash Road, I think, which was pointed out to me a few years back. And I read it and I thought, wow, well, that's kind of really what I'm trying to do, that small town, big secrets, cop on the wrong foot.
So there's reviews coming out now. Do you want to, you've got one there, haven't you, Greg? Do you want to read that out for me?
It's by a reader, Maggie the Reader, what she wrote. She summarises part of the plot and she said, my thoughts, I literally could not stop reading this. When I had to stop, I was sorely disappointed. Greg Woodland's writing style is detailed enough so that you, as the reader, believe that you're right in the story along with Hal. Australian slang is prevalent in this book, which I absolutely loved. I'm a big wordy. And the big reveal as to who's been stalking the family is shocking. You won't want to miss this book. 4.5 out of 5.
Well, that's a great start, don't you think?
Well, that's a nice review. I've been getting a few of them on Goodreads and so on. And Christian White liked it. And
yes.
And Gary did too. They were both kind enough to write some nice things about it, which is on.
And have you started writing your next book?
Yeah, I'm about 2/3 of the way through book 2 in the Moorabool series. Yeah.
Wow.
It's set about 5 years on from this one. I've got an idea of writing a few books that are each a couple of years on. so that the cop is growing older and beginning to lose his powers, and the boy is starting to grow up, and he's eventually going to skirt a life of crime and somehow wind up a copper himself. But in this second book, he's flirting with the wrong side of the law at the moment, and the cop has to kind of take him in hand a little bit, but he's got his own difficulties too, solving a couple of alleged suicides. So, yeah, it's I'm right in the thick of it at the moment. Yeah.
Well, we've got to wrap up. I've got to say, Greg, it's just so inspiring, and it must be super exciting for you to get this book published and have it out there in the world and to great review. I mean, it's fantastic, it is. Isn't it?
Thank you, Cheryl. Yeah, no, it's great. It is wonderful to have something finished, to have this story finished at last, and to see it out there. And I'm looking forward to readers enjoying it.
Well, congratulations, Greg.
Thank you, Cheryl.
If you'd like more information about Better Reading, follow us on Facebook or visit betterreading.com.au.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by Belinda Audio. Belinda audiobooks are available on CD and MP3 from online booksellers and bookshops everywhere, or you can download from Audible, Google Play, or the iBook Store. We've also created our own app called BorrowBox that's available from both the App Store and Google Play. All you need to do to get it working is to download the app, join your local public library, and you'll gain access to the world's best collection of ebooks and e-audiobooks available for you to loan on your phone or your personal device. Belinda, we're here to enable you to escape, imagine, grow, and be inspired through the power of storytelling. Belinda Audiobooks. Anywhere, everywhere.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you enjoyed this podcast, leave us a review and check out the other podcasts on the Better Reading Network.